until they seek us in this room.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the April NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak or provide comment. You will ask to be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Tim, if you could read the Open Public Meeting Notice.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing, and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today.
Manera, if we could do the roll call.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Carlo.
Here.
Noreen Giblin from the Governor's Office.
Here.
Commissioner Marlene Caridi from Banking and Insurance.
Present.
Okay, and on the phone, we have Roberto Sabarenas for Labor Commissioner Angelo.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean Lazarette.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Okay, Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Rosemarie Hicks. No. Marcia Marley.
Here.
Aisha Glover. Not yet. Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Robert.
And I'm sorry, Robert Shimko, but not least, Robert Shimko. Mr. Chairman, we have a
came in from the coast.
All right.
Credit for attendance.
So we have two sets of meetings, meeting minutes for approval today. In front of everyone are the minutes to the March 9th board meeting for review and approval. And again, this is, I know, a little awkward where we're in person, but also most of the people are on by phone. If you could state your name for the record when making a motion or a second, be much appreciated. Can I get a motion to approve the March 9th regular meeting minutes?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving on to the executive session meeting minutes of the March 9th board meeting. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. A second?
Noreen Giblin, second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Recusals, abstentions? All right, I have some remarks this morning. It's great to see the folks here in the room today. Great to be back here. We got a late start. There was a lot of making nice that needed to occur this morning. And I have to share with you how much fun I had coming in this morning when Andrew, who works the front desk, shared with me his half and half from his private stash.
Good to be the chairman.
This is true, but, you know, it's good to be welcome. So, thank you, Andrew. I know it's going to be a little awkward today with some of the people on by phone and some online. It's been our first board meeting in person in over 2 years. So let me just say a few things. Much has happened since March of 2020. The EDA has launched multiple programs and approved more than 94,000 applications for small business support, totaling over $710 million. We've implemented several programs established by the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, including Emerge and Aspire. The New Jersey Wind Fort, a once-in-a-generation landmark project, has commenced construction, spurring the creation of related educational, supply chain, and workforce development programs and jobs that will ensure New Jersey benefits from the full economic impact of this groundbreaking project. The EDA is building long-term resilience in New Jersey by implementing programs created by the Economic Recovery Act. These programs continue to hit milestones. Under the Main Street Lease Assistance Program, the EDA has approved support totaling over $4.1 million to nearly 178 businesses, more than half of which are minority-owned. The EDA is processing applications and has begun approvals under the Main Street Business Improvement Program. Applications open for transformative projects under the Historic Preservation Reinvestment Program. And this month, we will launch applications for the Main Street Micro Business Loan Program. Today, the board is considering the highly anticipated New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund. The fund is designed to incentivize investment in emerging New Jersey companies while creating mentoring, networking, and educational opportunities to help position these companies for success. As the economy continues to rebound post-COVID, the EDA continues to work hard to create and launch programs that contribute to the stronger, fairer economy Governor Murphy envisions for New Jersey. I want to welcome everyone back to Trenton, and I need to show you, this is fine when you work from home. Coffee stains on the chairman's remark. It was so thorough enough, it showed up on both sides, and this is the in-person version. So we'll all have to change our habits as we begin to show up in person again. Let me turn things over to Tim. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be back and doing this in person. I think we did 27 telephonic meetings, two full trips around the sun, plus three, maybe four special meetings were done since the last time we were in person in this room together. So I want to take this moment to thank the board, particularly you, Mr. Chairman, but the entire board for your hard work, your dedication, your commitment of incalculable amount of time and energy and good thoughts and advice and guidance and oversight for all of us. It's deeply, deeply appreciated. I'll be brief because we've got plenty to get to, including the Evergreen Fund and a number of exciting other initiatives. For as much as it's familiar to be back in the same room, in a lot of ways we're in a really different place as an economy and as a state than we were 2 years ago. As we sit here this morning, I feel about as good about our momentum as an economy as I have in a long time, and I think as is warranted in probably a generation or two. And that's not just happy talk and being excited about some of the initiatives we're working on. But if you look at some of the data and some of the things that are happening in the broader economy, whether that's credit upgrades, and I know Liz is on the phone, kudos to Liz and the team under the governor's leadership, getting state's credit upgraded for the first time in some cases in the 70s by some of the agencies, whether that's two consecutive quarters of top 20 GDP growth for a state that used to sort of bang around the mid to low 40s of GDP growth, real momentum there. And we'll talk about this when Tim does the Evergreen Fund, Tim Rollander does the Evergreen Fund, not speaking in the third person about myself. I'm crazy quite yet. By the end of the meeting, probably. to go from 17th in venture capital up to number, back into the top 10 to number 9 in venture capital. I'd rather be 9th than 17th, but I sure as hell rather be 3rd than 9th, so we've got to keep going. That's what we'll talk about this morning. But there's real momentum in the economy, and there's real excitement about what's happening in New Jersey. You can see that again in data. You can see that in some of the signature projects like the Wind Port, like the efforts around small business, like the efforts to bring hacks to New Jersey, those kinds of things, where we are facing the challenge of how do you manage lots of opportunities at once. And that's a high-class challenge to manage, versus not enough opportunities. But for as strong as the momentum is, and I think Governor Murphy set out a vision 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago now, to create a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. And for as much progress as we've made, for as much momentum as we have, I think we all know that there remains significant work to be done and significant opportunities. There are still too many people looking for work. There's too many small businesses that are still struggling to access capital, particularly businesses owned by women and people of color. There remains tremendous potential to continue our momentum in recapturing our leadership position in innovation and entrepreneurship. opportunities to bring investment to our communities, particularly our underserved and underinvested in communities. And so while we are, can and should feel good about where we stand from a momentum perspective from where we are right now, I'm excited about the opportunities and eager to tackle the challenges that still lie ahead. And so I would encourage us to talk about it as we've been apart for a while, to get back together as a moment to kind of renew our commitment to Governor Murphy's vision. This is the dog-eared, coffee-stained, to the chairman's point, copy of the governor's economic development plan that he released on October 1st, 2018, that I carry in my briefcase every day as if it were the nuclear codes. It's just an economic report, nuclear codes. But to recommit ourselves and renew our commitment to the principles and priorities that are articulated there that are, pardon the allusion to the program, that are evergreen. You know, a commitment to equity and inclusion in everything we do, a commitment to small business, a commitment to innovation, a commitment to our communities that is omnipresent in everything we do, or in everything at least we try to do, because we know we can continue to improve how we bring these programs to the market, how we can how we oversee them, how we administer them, and also how we can learn the lessons that were hard learned in 2018 and 19 about how we can do better, about how we oversee the public resources that we're entrusted with. And so all those things together at once, I think it's an opportune moment to kind of renew our commitment to that collectively. And I want to thank the board for your continued support and leadership for everything we're doing, for the staff, for the senior staff, for everyone in this, both in this building and in Newark and in Camden and North Brunswick at the Fort, for the incredible work that was done and continues to be done to advance the governor's economic development mission. So with that, I will... excited to get into the evergreen. The other reason I brought up the economic report is that one of the centerpieces of this proposal back in October of 2018 was the governor laying out the vision for the Innovation Evergreen Fund. And a lot of people at the time said, that's an interesting idea. Maybe we'll do that some decade or two from now. But the governor said, hell no, we're going to do this now. And let's get this done. And here we are prepared to announce or prepared to consider, hopefully adopt, the rules that will govern this incredibly important and impactful program, not just to grow our innovation economy, but to achieve the governor's mission of building the most inclusive, diverse and inclusive innovation ecosystem in America, which is a lot easier said than done. But this tool and a number of the other tools we'll be back before this board discussing in the next several months are laser focused on both of those. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions. Great. Yield the floor back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tim. I'd like to cover policy committee, but I'd like to say one thing that was not covered in policy committee. Today, in the lobby, we have new, and for those on the phone, new New Jersey EDA notebooks that have a near Kelly green color. And I want to say that Governor Murphy, CEO Tim Sullivan, and Kevin Quinn work closely with Virginia and the communications team to make green our color. So there we go. So I would like to highlight some things that did happen at Policy Committee. As Tim mentioned, the Innovation Evergreen Rules will have a beneficial impact for the state of New Jersey, as well as other new programs that the EDA is rolling out. The Food Security Planning Grant Program and the Historic Property Survey Grant Program as well. I applaud the efforts of the EDA and their partners in promoting programs that can make a difference in the everyday lives of New Jersey residents, in terms of improving food access and a better understanding of historic resources and communities across the state. So the first item up is the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules, New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund Evergreen Program. Tim Rollander, Director of Venture Programs, presenting. Tim?
Really quick, Mr. Chairman, before we vote, Phil Loggia has joined the meeting and is available for a vote on this item.
Great, thank you. Hey, Phil.
Thank you.
I was surprised. No. thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you today to talk about a different kind of green to support the state of New Jersey. I'm Tim Rollander, Director of Venture Programs here at the EDA, and joined by my teammates Alexander Packman and Emmanuel Esochon, Senior Product Officer and Diversity Entrepreneur and Finance Officer, respectively. It's an honor to present the program recommendation today for a platform that is so thoughtfully conceived and diligently crafted, created through legislation out of the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. The New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund is a core element to Governor Murphy's strategic plan to make New Jersey the most diverse and innovative economy in the nation, in particular driving the capital and resources critical to support early stage entrepreneurs to build thriving businesses in the state. The New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program is a novel platform built using familiar economic development tools assembled to create a collaborative alignment of well-established corporations operating in the state, professional venture capital firms operating anywhere in the country, and the innovative early stage businesses growing right here in New Jersey. Created through legislation out of the Economic Recovery Act. That part? Sorry, there we go. The Evergreen program is a large, multifaceted program. The memo, complete with regulations and detailed appendices, has been distributed for your review, as well as discussed at policy and incentive committees, and public listening sessions hosted as part of Executive Order 63 on January 6, 2020. So I'll summarize the program and recommendation in just six bullet points, and then happy to take any questions. The Evergreen program is a program in three parts. Approval of the program authorizes the sale of $300 million of tax credits to corporations with a New Jersey tax liability, and in addition seeks to secure strategic commitments from these entities to help support the innovation economy in New Jersey and secure participation on the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Advisory Board. Two, using funds raised from the sale of tax credits, the program will look to qualify venture capital firms on the basis of minimum eligibility and weighted criteria to ensure alignment and strategic alignment with strategic and investment goals of the state. Part of the objectives being to encourage greater participation by the venture capital industry in New Jersey and the formation of new and diverse venture capital firms in New Jersey. For example, a staggering fact, much less than 1% of the investment professionals in the venture capital industry are black women. Diversity and equity and inclusion are a forethought in the formation of the program. Finally, the program seeks to partner with those qualified venture capital firms to invest in qualified high-growth businesses in the state and support those businesses with strategic commitments of the established corporations already participating in the auction component of the program, creating a dynamic cycle of innovation. So this month, we're presenting a recommendation for approval for the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules for the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program and authorize staff to submit the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed new rules for promulgation in the New Jersey Register. And submit the proposed program rules as final adopted rules for promulgation in the New Jersey Register if no formal comments are received. Two, the creation of the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund, a tax credit and investment program authorized by the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020 to foster collaborative engagement among established corporations that will purchase tax credits and commit strategic value to the New Jersey innovation economy. Venture capital firms that will invest the funds raised and the innovative early stage businesses that will receive the funds in the form of investment. A delegation to the authority's chief executive officer to establish the dates for the corporate business tax auction and approve follow-on investment as explained in the memorandum distributed for your review. So with that, thank you very much. Pardon my numerous slip-ups, and happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Tim? If we have no questions for Tim, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Charles. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you very much, Tim. All right. The next item on the agenda is the offshore wind painting and submerged arc welding memorandum of understanding. The New Jersey EVA and Salem County Vocational Technical School. Jen Becker, Managing Director, Wind Institute Development, presented.
Good morning. So before you is a MOU between New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the Salem County Vocational Technical School, a public vocational school in Salem County. The MOU would provide up to $200,000 in funding to support Salem's expansion of its painting and welding program. Using funding available through the MOU between EDA and the Board of Public Utilities to support offshore wind training and research. These expanded programs will prepare students and workers for jobs in heavy steel offshore wind component manufacturing, including the hundreds of jobs anticipated at EW's offshore wind monopile manufacturing facility at the Port of Paulsboro, and future manufacturing anticipated at the New Jersey Wind Port. Offshore wind is a strategic sector for New Jersey, and EDA is supporting the launch of the Wind Institute to accelerate workforce development and innovation in the state. This MOU complements the one recently approved by the board with Gloucester County Institute of Technology, and together will create a regional pipeline of skilled workers in South New Jersey. Underlying the need for this MOU is that construction of EEW's monopile facility is underway, and hiring of specialized welders and painters will begin by the end of next year. These occupations will be high quality and permanent job opportunities and will require specialized training to meet the skill set needs for offshore monopile welding, known as sub-arc welding and painting. Salem is already making investments in expanded welding training. Their welding instructor recently completed a train-the-trainer program at Gloucester County, and with EDA will coordinate curriculum development between the two schools. Salem has already secured funding to expand its welding classroom to be able to accommodate more welding students. And this MOU will align with that construction project by providing funding for Salem to secure specialized welding and painting equipment and related materials, fund curriculum development and instructor time, market and promote these programs, and provide scholarships or other means to provide more affordable training opportunities. So as part of the MOU, Salem County School will provide EDA with detailed plans and budget for the expansion of these programs, including their strategies to provide enrollment, positive enrollment, and employment outcomes. The MOU has a term of 24 months with an option for a one-year extension. And so the request to the board is to approve the MOU and provide delegated authority to the CEO for the one-year extension if needed. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jen. Do we have any questions for Jen?
Sharon, one question. Obviously, this is a new type of welding. Do the teachers need to be taught down at Salem County College? Or?
Yeah, so we actually just recently held a train-the-trainer program at Gloucester County where we had welding instructors from four vocational schools participate in this training on this equipment by Lincoln Electric, which is the manufacturer of the equipment, so that they in turn are now trained on the specialized equipment and then in turn can teach the students.
Thank you, Charles. Other questions for Jen? If we have no more questions for Jen, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Second, Alondra.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is Food Security Planning Grant Program. Rucha Gadre, Senior Advisor, Food Security and Innovation, presenting. Rucha, I hope I'm getting that right.
Yes.
Thank you,
Chairman, and good morning, members of the board. I am here today requesting the members of the board to approve the establishment of Food Security Planning Grant Program, a pilot initiative which will utilize up to $1,500,000 in funding from the Economic Recovery Act. The grant program is also requesting delegated authority for EDA's Chief Executive Officer to approve individual applications, decline applications based on non-discretionary review, and to approve final administrative decisions upon recommendation of the hearing officer for appeals based on non-discretionary determination. New Jersey continues to face a crisis of food insecurity. Not having access to food, and more specifically nutritious food, has a direct impact on one's health. For this reason, access to nutritious, affordable, and culturally relevant food is a key component not only in healthy, sustainable local food systems, but also in vibrant, growing communities and aligns well with building a stronger and fairer New Jersey. The Food Security Planning Grant Program, a competitive program, will be the authority's first pilot program aimed towards improving food access and food security in neighborhoods across the state of New Jersey that have limited access to fresh produce and other healthy food items. The grant program will enable eligible applicants to leverage a distressed asset within a food desert community and propose a place-based strategy that can improve access to food and thus, in turn, food security. For the purpose of this grant program, distressed asset will be defined as a commercial building or series of buildings, its attachments, or vacant land that is fully or partially vacant, at least for a year, that due to its deteriorated condition or appearances of its exterior because of deferred maintenance, overgrown vegetation, can be leveraged to improve food access and thus food security. Applicant eligibility under this program is limited to New Jersey municipal governments, county governments, and redevelopment agencies. The geographic catchment area of these entities must include a food desert community. Stakeholder engagement and facilitation to identify community desires and needs pertaining to food access and food security will be a key component of this planning grant program. Funds under this program can be used to propose plans such as, but not limited to, identification and development of community-based initiatives that can improve food access and food security, determining cost benefits of retrofitting, redeveloping, or re-greening distressed assets as it relates to food security. developing a plan to drive economic growth for the locality by implementing innovations around food access and food security, creating greater social, economic, and environmental sustainability by identifying ways to grow, process, and sell fresh produce, or even feasibility studies for a supermarket or food retailer. Findings and outcomes from such local plans can serve as a tool for developing and deploying future comprehensive food security initiatives. Grants will be competitively awarded. Applications must meet all applicable eligibility criteria and achieve a minimum of 55 points out of 100 based on the evaluation criteria set forth in the program specifications and subject to availability of the funds. There will be a limit of one grant award per qualifying food desert community. However, if there is still funding available after the above restriction is satisfied, the authority may award the remaining funding to additional applications within an already funded food desert community based on the overall score of the application until all funds have been exhausted and all eligible applicants have received funding. Grant amounts will range from $75,000 to $125,000 and will be determined based on the food desert community composite factor score where the distressed asset is located. Along with their application, the applicant must provide a letter of support from the Office of the Mayor or Chief Executive of the municipality where the distressed asset is located, and also from a stakeholder from within the food desert community. The full amount of the grant award will be made over two courses. First 50% will be disbursed upon the full execution of the grant agreement, and the second 50% will be disbursed upon receipt of a full plan, review of the plan, and a final report by the authority. Food insecurity is a complex issue and one that we certainly cannot solve on our own. Real sustainable change requires creativity, collaboration, and commitment. Through this pilot grant program, we hope to inspire and empower communities to participate in the planning process. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for Rucha? We have no questions for Rucha. Can I get a motion to... Excuse me?
That was you. That was you echoing.
I believe. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Roberto Sobrani, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.
All right, next item is Historic Property Survey Grant Program. Idita Milstead, Director of Historic Preservation, presenting. Idita.
Good morning. I am here and I would like to walk you through the new proposed Historic Property Survey Grant Program, which is a $400,000 pilot program intended to provide grants to municipal and county government entities and non-for-profit organizations working in collaboration with or on behalf of municipal or county government entities to conduct historic property surveys. The program seeks to increase the overall understanding of existing historic resources throughout the state and to serve as a planning tool to be used as part of comprehensive economic development planning. The program seeks to further the knowledge and understanding of historic resources throughout the state. Applicants may apply for grant funding up to $125,000 per entity, and they will be required to provide a minimum contribution of at least 10% of the total project cost. The program would allow for two distinct types of surveys, municipal surveys that are surveys of properties associated by location, located within a specific municipality, and these surveys will apply for government-restricted municipalities only. They can also apply for thematic surveys, and those are surveys of properties that are closely associated by a theme, and the theme could be things such as historic event or time period, industry, architectural type or style, or a group of individuals, which could be groups associated by race, ethnicity, or some event. Unless all properties in a thematic survey are located within a GRM, the applicant must demonstrate that at least 10% of the properties that are expected to be surveyed fit the program's definition of distressed asset. Under the program, distressed asset will be defined as a building that is fully or partially vacant, or that due to the deteriorated appearance of its exterior because of deferred maintenance, such as deteriorated paint or overgrown vegetation, boarded up doors or windows, etc., could be seen as a deterrent to economic growth in the surrounding area. The competitive grant applications will be accepted and reviewed on a rolling basis until all funds are committed. They will be evaluated based on need and benefit to the community and community support. Additional scoring can be also obtained for projects that seek to do survey in municipalities that have been ranked among the top 50 municipalities under the 2020 Municipal Revitalization Index as established by DCA, or for projects that their scope includes focus of the investigation and the survey or identification of resources associated with underrepresented groups or periods of history. And this example of this would be minority groups or groups associated with, for example, women history, LGBTQ, or civil rights movement. Applications seeking funding using the underrepresented history will need to provide justification on that claim, and that justification will be reviewed using the New Jersey Historic Trust established parameters under their underrepresented history special initiative, which is part of their current grant round. And on conclusion, we are requesting approval of the creation of a historic property survey grant program, the utilization of $400,000 from the Economic Recovery Act of 2020 for the program, and delegation of authority to the Chief Executive Officer for approval of individual applications to the program in accordance with the terms of the memo and the program specifications, and to decline applications on non-discretionary reasons, as well as to approve final administrative decisions upon recommendation from a hearing officer based on non-discretionary declination. And that's it. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for IDETA? If we have no questions for IDETA, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Edna. All right. Next item on the agenda, recommendation for award, investment cash management consulting services, Rich LoCascio, controller, presenting. Rich, hello.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone.
Good to see you.
How are you today? Good to see you also. All right. So
what we have for audit committee?
No.
All right, everyone.
So what we have here this morning is a request for the members to approve entering into a contract with PFM Asset Management of Ewing. This is to provide investment and cash management consulting services for the authority's idle cash. And what we have is a one-year term with two-year extensions, which is consistent with the contract that we have in place today. This is for a maximum not to exceed contract price of about $900,000, which again is in line with the existing contract. And by way of background, on January 26th of this year, we issued an RFP and did the required posting in two newspapers, the authority's website, state business portal, and distributed it also to potentially interested bidders via an email blast. In total, the RFP notice went to over 1,000 email contacts. And for good or bad, one proposal was received. It was the incumbent we have today. That proposal was reviewed and scored by the pre-established evaluation committee. Evaluation committee reviewed for personnel, experience, and ability, scored it accordingly. And separately and independently, our colleagues in IPM reviewed the pricing and scored that accordingly, and the winning bidder, PFM Asset Management, received a score of 5. Again, the members are requested to approve the contract with PFM for the maximum of $900,000 with a one-year term, two-year extensions, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
All right, Rich, I just have one question. They scored 5. Was that a 1 out of 5 scale or a?
Scale is 1 to 5, 5 being the highest. And because you have no other responses by default, it's that. I would say this, just for everyone's background. we've worked with the incumbent for the past 5 years. They've done a good job for us. They've had a good return given what the market is. You know, to me, the first question that would come up would be, well, if you sent it out to this many people, how'd you only get one response? To me, and I'm surprised that you wouldn't even get a few where people just slap together the boilerplate stuff and throw it out there, and you'd get a few. In the past, our investment strategy was more fixed income, and for those, and I know Charles was here, if you go back a few years, we said we wanted to try to go out a little further on the yield curve, try to get a better return on things, and with the help of the audit committee at the time, we changed our investment guidelines, and we moved into some equities in different areas. And I think because some of these firms just do fixed income, that kind of knocked some off the page, you know, for potential bidders. But otherwise, you know, they've done a good job, I think. And yeah, it's probably one of the few contracts you'll get on the business support side of the organization that's going to generate income. So, you know, so. We're always happy to see that.
Thank you, Rich. Other questions for Rich?
I do have a question. Are there stipulations in the contract that preclude some companies from bidding on it? Is that why we're not getting enough support for bids to come in?
Yeah. I mean, there's always requirements that firms have to do and provide certain documentation, you know, particularly in this climate as places where you can't invest in globally and things like that. But I'm not so sure that's it. You know, again, it wasn't for lack of trying.
Sure.
It was certainly put out to a lot of folks, and I do think that perhaps the change in our investment guidelines to try and do a little more, I think, is what thinned out some of them.
Mr. Chairman, it's Jenny Bauer. Along those lines, I find that a little puzzling too, because to me, if you have a more diverse investment strategy, it should open up to, I would think, more potential responders. And, you know, where staying in the fixed income avenue has certainly been more challenging over the past few years because interest rates have been so low. So, you know, I certainly respect the committee's recommendation, and I trust that, you know, you've been happy in the past, but I also find it just a little puzzling that we didn't get any other responder. That doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I can think of is that, you know, and Chairman, you know this, every place has difficulty staffing in the last couple of years. Maybe they just felt it was more than they were willing to do to put together a proposal to get out to us. But there's no other practice.
Is it fair to say that this is more of a contract around cash management than investor discretion on allocating?
Yeah, we have we have guidelines for what we want the investment manager to do. And largely, you know, it's been a laddered portfolio. And historically, we've invested in treasuries and agencies and commercial paper. And we have the separate piece, which is our employee post-employment benefit trust, and that one goes out as far as 10 years, right, to try to get you know, a little better return, because it's not cash that you need to have liquid to get out the door for all of our projects that come before you for approval. And definitely in years past, we would have a few more responses. The firm that we had prior to the incumbent, they knew that they weren't even going to be eligible when we made that decision that we were going to do things beyond the fixed income, because that's all they did. And they told us up front, they said, you know, that's just not what we do.
Okay. Other questions for Rich?
Rich, not that it's necessarily relevant, but PFM, what was their fee last time we had them under contract?
It was not any higher than it is today. I'll tell you that annually, if I look at last year, they were somewhere between $170,000 and $180,000. So if you were to multiply that by five, you'd come in below what they're at today. So, again, that price is fixed for the 5 years. There's no escalation in there. So really, they'd be looking at doing this job for 10 years. And just to give you a little background, if you go back 10 years, when we had the prior firm, these guys bid, and their proposal at the time was actually, the proposal itself was scored the highest, and they didn't win because their fee was higher. And it was almost, you know, 5 years to the day, the guy reached out and said, are you guys going out to bid for this? You know, so they, you know, they've wanted to work here for a while, you know, before coming here. They've done other state agencies and authorities, and, you know, so their price is fixed for essentially the last 5 years and the next 5 years if you know, the board deems it.
Okay. Other questions for Rich? All right, if we have no other questions for Rich, can I get a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you, everyone. Good to see everyone. Have a good day.
Next item on the agenda, request for approval of a design services agreement with Atlantic City Electric for a transmission line connection to the New Jersey wind port. Jonathan Kennedy, Managing Director of Infrastructure, presents. Jonathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Members are asked to approve the authority entering into a design services agreement with Atlantic City Electric, or ACE, for the design, engineering and permitting of a transmission line for the New Jersey wind port. ACE holds the exclusive franchise to a service area in southern New Jersey, including the area in which the wind port is located. The design agreement before the board today follows the submittal of an application for electric service in 2020 and completion of a feasibility study in late 2021. That feasibility study determined that an approximately 12-mile transmission line would be needed to connect the port to ACE's grid. Staff have evaluated alternative power solutions at length and are satisfied that ACE's proposed solution provides the best overall value when all regulatory and technical risk factors are considered. The authority's total obligation under the design services agreement for the board is $5.14 million. This is based on an estimate of probable cost plus a 20% contingency. The agreement commits the authority to pay $2 million as a deposit, with ACE's actual costs reimbursed on a monthly invoicing basis. The deposit reflects regulatory requirements applying to ACE in terms of protecting existing ratepayers from capital project risks. Any deposit monies that are not used when design is completed will either be applied to the cost of construction should parties continue with a separate construction agreement, or will be returned to the authority. All ACE subcontractors will be competitively bid in order to ensure value for money, and ACE will be required to provide invoices evidencing how public funds were spent. The authority will draw on state project funding to cover costs incurred under its agreement. Staff will return to the board for approval of construction funding once the transmission line's design reaches a sufficient degree of completion, and we may also return to the board sooner for the purchase of certain long lead materials if satisfied there is a schedule benefit. In close, members are asked to approve the authority entering into a design services agreement with Atlantic City Electric for a not to exceed cost of $5.14 million. Happy to take questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions for Jonathan?
Chairman, Mr. Glover has joined the meeting.
Thank you.
John, I have one question. Does the proposed routing of this line require the purchase of any properties?
Good question. Not that I'm aware. No, I think the intention is to use an easement to get through properties. So the routing study, so the feasibility study that ACE did in 2020, looked at the optimal route, and I think it took, for instance, property acquisition into account, but my understanding is that they will be relying on existing and new easements to get from the substation to the port. You know, the route will be kind of using existing routes, and then once it gets to the PSEG property, of course, we'll need a new easement to navigate to the on-site substation.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Robert, this is your area of expertise. Jonathan assures me we can't run a big extension cord over the new plant, but here we are.
I'm surprised that the 12-mile route is ready to treat.
Yeah.
You got a nuclear power plant right next door.
Fair observation. We had the same thought initially. Staff have spent probably 18 months extensively evaluating all alternative options. We've kicked the tires on a host of local options. The reality is, for both kind of regulatory reasons and economics, building kind of transformers and substations to convert down the power to the level we need, it would actually cost more than bringing it 12 miles. So unfortunately, there's no easy fix.
Other questions for Jonathan? All right, we have no questions for Jonathan. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Robert. Jenny, we had it here in the room. Can I get a second from you?
You certainly may. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, John.
I believe the DEP is going to be recusing on that vote.
Yes. DEP recused on. Elizabeth, are you abstaining from this vote for DEP?
Yes, I'm recusing from this vote due to the department's activity in the permitting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good chat. Good catch. All right. Next item here. Incentives. Jenny, would you like to say a few words in advance of the incentive items on the agenda?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm so disappointed not to be with you all today. I intend to be at the meeting in person next month, so looking forward to that. But yes, the incentive committee did meet on March 31st, where a number of important items were discussed, namely the end of the waiver for qualified business facilities for BEEP, GROW, HUB, and BRAG, as well as a modification for a parking authority under ERG for the City of Patterson, and changes for the FIM and digital tax credits in terms of delegation now given to our CEO. So, again, an important meeting, and looking forward to getting these approvals done. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So the next item is the end of waiver of required time at a qualified business facility and or project site. Lisa Patrizzi, Director, Incentives Compliance, presenting. Lisa.
Thank you. Good morning. The state coordinator response to address the required 80% work time spent at the QBF for an eligible employee at the onset of the pandemic in March of 2020. By offering GROW, HUB, BEEP, and BRAG companies a waiver to this requirement. In July 2021, legislation was enacted that reduced the requirement to be at the QBF from 80% to 60%, but the waiver to this required work time spent continued, and we noticed these companies that the waiver would end January 1st, 2022. As we all are aware, in January of this year, Governor Murphy declared a public health emergency, which extended various actions, including the authority's waiver to the work time spent. We again noticed these companies of the extension of the waiver. The governor then issued EO 292, which included the authority's waiver, until it expressly is revoked by the authority board or until the state of emergency is lifted by the governor, whichever is sooner. Authority staff is seeking approval from the board for the deadline to this waiver to be June 30th, 2022, at which time an eligible full-time employee will need to spend at least 60% of its work time at the QBF, whereby we again will notice the companies of its expiration. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Lisa? We have no questions for Lisa. Can I get a motion to approve?
Moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. Avoiding the awkward moment. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Thank you, Lisa.
All right, next item on the agenda, Parking Authority of the City of Patterson, Modification Mixed-Use Parking Economic Redevelopment and Growth Grant Program. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, and Paul Seppi, Managing Director, Business Development, and our parking lot expert here at the EDA. Paul.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Nice to see most of you. Nice to see all of you. For those not on the phone, I look forward to seeing you next time. If there is a next time for me, apparently. Never have, sir. I will say it's nice to see that Jonathan and Tim got the pink tie memo, Chairman. We had a sidebar about that before. But for those of you expecting to hear the soothing voice and charismatic presentation from the legendary Michael Conti, you may want to ask for a refund, as Mike is on a well-deserved vacation, and my colleague Dave Lawyer and I will be our pitch in. Before you this morning is a recommendation to modify our prior ERG Economic Redevelopment Growth Grant approval for a mixed-use parking structure located in the city of Patterson. The original project approved in 2018 included the demolition of a 735-space garage that had been built in 1965, and the construction of a 9-story garage with 940 spaces. The original project had an estimated project cost of $44 million and had been awarded $30.5 million of ERG credits as part of the Economic Opportunity Act of 2013's allocation for mixed-use parking projects. As with many projects of this scope, the project had experienced a couple of delays, and as things were coming together, the pandemic hit, which not only caused additional delays, but an increase in materials and the cost of construction, making the originally approved project infeasible, unaffordable, and in need of a new financing structure. The Patterson Parking Authority went back to the planning stages for a project that would be feasible, given the resources available, and issued an RFP for a revised project that will either include a 7-level 750-space garage or an 8-level 865-space garage, both of which will include does include a 2,800-square-foot retail component. Fast forward to today, the Parking Authority has implemented a temporary parking plan to address the parking needs of the city while the project is underway. The demolition has begun with the assistance of some funding from the municipality, and that should be completed within the next week or so, actually. Just yesterday, they received 4 responses for that previously referenced RFP, and they intend to make their selection on April 18th. Dave's going to talk about the numbers in a moment, but their intention is to go to market with the bond sale by the end of May, with a simultaneous construction start. The construction period is scheduled to take 16 months, and the project is anticipated to be completed before the statutory deadline of December 31st, 2023. With that, I'll hand it over to Dave.
Thank you, Paul. The sizing of the award excludes ineligible costs related to escrows and reserves, the EDA's ERG fees, demolition costs, and the value of the land which is being contributed by PPA. PPA is eligible for a higher award of up to $32.8 million. However, in its modification application, requested $28.5 million, as that is the amount of assistance needed to complete the project. EDA staff has reviewed and determined that the applicant has legitimate sources of funding to cover all the project costs. Sources of financing total $42.7 million, primarily comprised of $34.2 million, of bond financing issued by the Patterson Parking Authority. The cost to demolish the existing garage will be funded with a $2 million grant from the City of Patterson, and this grant is being treated as equity in addition to the $6.5 million value of the land to round out the capital stack. The authority received a revised pro forma for the modified project in order to evaluate if there is a shortfall in the project economics related to the return on the applicant's investment. Staff analyzed this revised pro forma and compared the total rate of return with and without the mixed-use parking ERG over 11 years comprised of 1 year to build and 10 years of cash flow. As indicated in our analysis, the project would not be completed without the benefit of our assistance. Without the ERG bonds could not be issued, which will result in a shortfall of approximately $21.2 million in funds necessary to construct the new garage. With the benefit of the IRG, the IRR is 5.59%, which is below the maximum return of 16% for a parking project located in the city of Patterson as determined by the EDA's hurdle rate model. In conclusion, EDA staff's recommendation is to award 100% of actual eligible parking costs and 40% of eligible non-parking costs, not to exceed $28.5 million.
All right. Do we have any questions for David or Paul?
Do we know how high they're going to be going, either 7 or 8 stories, or is that going to be dependent on the proposals that are coming in?
That's correct, yeah. At this point, we're only aware that four proposals have been received. They had not, as of last evening, had an opportunity to review those. That'd be probably, it's their job to really make that public announcement. But there are two plans that were put forth, depending upon the scope, the ability for the contractor to deliver, costs, et cetera, that will make that determination on whether it's 7 or 8 floors.
Other questions for Paul and Dave?
Chairman, I have one. Paul and Dave, what is the authority going to do with the retail space? I didn't see that like factored into the financial. Are they going to condo that? Or?
It's nominal in size to the scope of the project as part of the requirement by law. It's got to be a mixed-use parking structure. Likely to be a new stand, coffee shop, et cetera.
Okay. So,
because it's just across the street from the Patterson train station.
Okay.
Other questions? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Charles. Can I get a second?
I get a second.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item. The New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program Delegations of Authority. Chris Baker, Chief Legal and Administrative Affairs Officer, and Matthew Sestridge, Senior Program Officer, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Chris?
Chairman, board members. I just want to provide a little bit of context for this next item. As many of you know, we hired a board governance consultant, Funston Advisory Services, to come and look at our board functionality and to help us figure out ways to improve board practices, functionality, and efficiency. The consultant's final written report included a number of findings and several recommendations regarding delegations of authority. For example, Funston found that the board has not delegated appropriate authority for program-related approvals and declinations, so that what ends up happening is that an inordinate amount of the members' time is spent in reviewing individual applications and transactions. So to address that issue, the consultant recommended that the board should delegate most programmatic transactional approvals and rejections to staff. This way, the board will have more time to spend on things like policy, planning, and new programs. That made sense. When Funston was here 2 years ago and interviewing board members and doing the research, it makes me even more sense today when you think about how the authority has changed over the last couple of years. Between 2019 and 2020, the number of board actions almost doubled. Between 2020 and 2021, the number of board actions more than doubled. So you think about that, we continued on that trajectory. We're going to end up doing weekly meetings instead of monthly. So we began this monumental effort to review, update, index, centralize all of the delegations of authority. This was such a huge project. Originally we started out thinking, okay, we're just going to do this all at once. It was virtually impossible. So what we did is break this into a couple of steps. So at the March meeting, the board approved our new delegation of authority policy. That provides that most delegations are going to be to the CEO, and then the CEO has the ability to sub-delegate to staff. So today, what will be presented to the board is an increase in the threshold for an existing delegation. This is a delegation that has already existed, but we're asking the board to increase it for the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit. So I'm sure a bunch of you really enjoy getting that board package that sometimes starts to look like a telephone book. I'm sure you all have enjoyed that, the fact that our meetings have grown from 45 minutes to an hour and have sometimes approached 2 hours. But for those of you who would like to get some of your time back, you'll be happy to hear that if the board does approve this recommendation today, it will mean that 10 board items will 10 items will no longer have to go to the board this month alone. If you look back at last year, we brought 68 of these to the board. Had we done this increase in delegation a year ago, that number would have gone down to 50, or would have decreased by 57 board items. So this is just the first of many. We'll be back again next month with some additional delegations of authority. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Matt to present the specifics.
Thank you, Chairman. The members are asked to approve updates to the delegations of authority for the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. This request is consistent with the delegation policy approved on March 9th, as discussed. The intro took a lot of my memo out. So as mentioned, changes to delegations of authority are intended to improve the authority's operating efficiency and responsiveness in program administration. These new and revised delegations will permit the board to focus more attention on the creation of new programs, program oversight, performance evaluation, and strategic planning, rather than reviewing routine individual transactions. The Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program incentivizes production companies to produce film and digital media content in the state and provides a transferable tax credit for qualified expenses incurred in New Jersey. The current applicable statute provides an annual allocation of tax credits for each fiscal year as follows: $100 million annually for studio partners, $100 million annually for film lease partners, $100 million annually for projects that are not either of those, we call that legacy projects, and $30 million annually for digital media projects. Beginning in fiscal year 2025, at the authority's discretion, an additional $350 million can be made available to studio partners and an extra $100 million made available for film lease partners. Over the last 4 years of the program, the review and approval by the board of both film and digital media projects have become quite routine, given that each application passes many levels of scrutiny, including reviews by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission, a third-party budget review, EDA staff review that includes sister agency checks, as well as a legal review of the applicant. The members are asked to delegate authority to approve individual applications for the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program for awards of 10% or less of the annual allocation per the specific allocation category stated above. The authority would allow the CEO or their delegate to an eligible film and application up to $10 million and up to $3 million for digital projects. Due to the significance of the award amount and complexity of the larger projects, board approval would still be required. Additionally, approvals for production companies coming in as film lease partners and studio partners would also require board review and approval. Since the program was established back in July 2018, there have been 65 approvals for film and, three approvals for digital media. For the film side, 57 would have been below that 10% threshold, and two of the three would be below on the digital side. The members are also asked to delegate authority to decline film and digital media tax credit applications for non-discretionary reasons. For example, if an application does not meet the eligibility requirements or when an application does not submit required documentation or information necessary to complete the review. This delegation is consistent with other EDA programs where the staff handles approvals, but also delegations and appeals when the basis for the decision are non-discretionary. When an application does not meet an eligibility criteria, such as when required documentation is not provided, or the scope of the project is below board-approved eligibility criteria, then no subjective analysis is required, and the application must be declined. Similar to board declinations, any appeals of delegated declinations must be submitted within the time frame described in the declination letter. If the declination is upheld, the applicant does have the right still to appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of the state. Again, the members are asked to approve the update to delegations of authority for the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Program, allowing delegated approval authority for film projects of $10 million and below and $3 million and below for digital projects. This request will require only one vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Matthew?
Mr. Chairman, it's Jenny Bauer. I just wanted to comment that I think this is a very smart decision, and I fully support it. It seems as though, as mentioned, we spend a lot of time on very detailed projects that we have an outstanding staff that I have full confidence will bring forth things that have been approved by themselves and through Tim Sullivan. So in any event, I just think this is a very efficient way of getting our boards to be able to discuss the really important things and not to be in the minute. So, thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Other questions or observations?
I just want to make it clear that all the approvals still will be coming in front of the board, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I believe it's quarterly, similar to the existing financing programs at the end of the memo.
All right, if there's no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, thank you, Matthew. Let's move on to the Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia, would you like to make a few comments?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I also apologize for not being there in person. I hope to be there next month. The Director's Loan and Review Committee met on March 31st, and the staff presented and answered questions by the committee on the following bond projects. First, an $85 million refunding bond for UMM Energy Partners, LLC, in Little Falls. Second, the issue of a standalone bond of $8 million for the Atlantic City Sewage Company. And third, the refunding of school facilities construction refunding bonds of up to $2 billion in order to refund and defease outstanding SFC obligations. Chairman, these projects are now before the full board for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. All right. David Lawyer, Project UMM Energy Partners, LLC.
Thank you. UMM Energy Partners, LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of DB Energy Assets, was formed in July 2011. In May 2012, the company entered into a 30-year contract with Montclair State University to design, build, own, and operate a central energy center and energy distribution system that will provide chilled water, steam, and electricity to the university campus. The company began commercial operation on September 1, 2013 and is currently providing full energy services to the campus. This project qualifies for tax-exempt bond financing as an exempt public facility, local district heating or cooling facility under the Internal Revenue Code. Authority assistance will enable the applicant to reduce its interest expense by refunding the outstanding balance of the 2012 issue. This is a public issue in which RBC Capital Markets is the underwriter. The total bond is $85 million, of which Series A of $62.5 million will be tax-exempt, and Series B of $22.5 million will be taxable. The bonds are expected to be rated investment grade by Moody's. This project is being presented for final approval.
Do you have any questions for David? There's no questions for David. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Marcia, can I get a second?
Jenny Bragg, second.
Hey, Jenny, any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to stick with David here. The Atlantic City Sewerage Company.
The Atlantic City Sewerage Company is a wholly owned sub of SR Utility Holding Corp. and was founded in 1888 and incorporated in 1890. The company's principal office is located at 1200 Atlantic Avenue, Atlantic City. ACSC is a privately owned public utility corporation of the state of New Jersey that owns and operates a wastewater collection system that is comprised of approximately 100 miles of sewer and 7 pumping stations with a combined capacity of 50 million gallons a day. The system services approximately 7,600 customers in Atlantic City. This project qualifies as an exempt public facility sewage project under the IRS code. Authority assistance will enable ACSC to finance the construction, rehabilitation, and upgrade and expansion of various sections and components of the sewer system required to meet the needs and demands of Atlantic City while maintaining the environmental integrity of the region. This is a preliminary approval request. Once the applicant is ready for final approval, that request will be brought back to this board for consideration. What the board is approving today is the concept of this project as detailed on the project summary. Your approval also permits the applicant to start incurring project costs that may be reimbursed by the proceeds after final approval and closing on the bond. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Questions for David? All right, if we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Noreen. Elizabeth, can you make that a second?
Yeah, absolutely. Make it a second.
Thank you. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, you're sticking around, fellas. You're not going anywhere.
You got the big one. You got the big one.
All right, the most soothing voice in the building, except I guess Michael Conte is
a rival. This is way better.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, I doubt that.
He was harping on a second here.
Okay, we'll have a little contest.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the New Jersey EDA School Facilities Construction Refunding Bonds. All right, Dave.
The Educational Facilities Act authorizes the authority to issue new bonds, refinance existing bonds, notes, and other obligations to which the proceeds may be used to finance and refinance costs of school facilities projects throughout the state. The act was passed in response to various New Jersey Supreme Court rulings relating to provisions of the New Jersey Constitution, which guarantees a thorough and efficient system of public schools. A school facilities project under the Act is defined as the planning, acquisition, demolition, construction, to name a few, of a school facility. A school facility is defined under the Act to mean any structure, building, or facility used for educational purposes by a school district and facilities that physically support such structures. A school facility does not include facilities used for non-educational purposes, such as an administration building, athletic stadiums, and swimming pools. The purpose of this request is to issue both tax-exempt and taxable refunding bonds that essentially will be used to refinance existing bond obligations. The primary goal and benefit of this refinancing will be a substantial reduction in the overall cash flow required to service the existing bonds. That savings may be used to further support future school facility projects within the state. The members are asked to approve the issuance of an amount not to exceed $2 billion of the authority school facilities construction refunding bonds. The proceeds will be used to refinance up to $2 billion of existing school facility bonds. The bonds to be refinanced will be selected from the list of existing bonds as shown in Appendix A of the board memo. The bonds will be rated by Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's and are expected to be investment grade. This transaction does not represent any financial exposure to the state or the EDA. Neither entity is extending cash or credit to fund the bonds. The bonds will be sold via a combination of a public market offering and a direct purchase by Barclays. In the public market offering, proceeds will be raised from individual and institutional investors, and in the direct purchase transaction, Barclays will purchase the bonds directly. The state is not obligated to pay, and neither the credit nor taxing power of the state is pledged to the payment of the principal or interest on the bonds. Bond payments are funded via appropriations from state legislature. The state legislature does not have a legal obligation to make an appropriation in support of bonds, and any non-payment does not represent an event of default. The EDA has a long history in issuing these types of bonds since April 2001. The EDA has issued $11.9 billion for new money projects under the Act and $15.8 billion refunding bonds such as these on the table today. As of March 1st of this year, the authority in connection with this program has $6.9 billion tax exempt and taxable bonds and notes outstanding. As permitted under the authority's rules, it has been requested that the closing fee associated with this issue be reduced by 50%. EDA staff supports that request. In conclusion, EDA staff recommends that the members approve the adoption of the 44th Supplemental Resolution authorizing the issuance of refunding bonds in the total aggregate principal amount not to exceed $2 billion and to approve the necessary authorizations, delegations, and actions that need to be taken to allow the closing and issuance of the bonds. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
DJ, can I get a second?
Second.
Phil Elodges.
All right, we'll go with Phil there. He's loudest. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving on to loans, grants, and guarantees. This is the Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund. Michael Dealey, DEP Manager, Underwriting, presenting.
Thank you. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program, we have one municipal application seeking approval. The Borough of Somerville has applied for a supplemental grant in the amount of $5 million. The proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with the remedial action that's been approved by DEP for completion at a former landfill. It's the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to redevelop the subject portion of the property as a solar energy field. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Questions for Michael? We have no questions for Michael. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
All
right.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to move on to the real estate portion. Charles, do you have any words to share?
Yes, Chairman, thank you. March 31st, 2022, the full real estate committee met. Along with staff, we had one matter on the agenda to discuss and provide some input. I dealt with building number 5 at the New Jersey Bus Center in North Brunswick, which is a 50-year-old building, and the matter that was considered was to do a shell renovation of the building along with extending contracts for both the Torcon and HDR, which is our architectural and engineering firm, who have been presently working on this project.
Steve? Thank you, Charles, and good morning. So I'm here to present the new real estate development project today, which Charles mentioned is our building number 5 at the Bioscience Center. So there's 3 components to what we're seeking from the board today. First is approval of a $4.75 million development budget. In addition, we're looking to amend our current contracts with our architecture firm of HDR and construction manager of Torcon, both with a significant history at the Technology Center, Bioscience Center. Back in 2015, we had board approval to initially rehab the shell of the Building 5 there at the site. We had been working with multiple tenants, which none of them happened to work out in our favor. Over time, the building has fallen into a little bit of disrepair, so right now we're looking to reposition this stranded EDA asset and work with our broker at the site to seek new prospective tenants for the site or for the building. There's multiple reuse alternatives that we've been considering. Could be expansion of our step-out labs or graduate space, which has been a real success at the center, or a potential university partnership, which may be a biomanufacturing facility. So again, we're looking to get approval of our overall budget to amend our contracts with HDR and Torcon to design and construct the shell rehabilitation of building number 5.
Folks have questions for Steve? We have no questions for Steve. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Charles. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to move on to the legal affairs and appeal of declinations portion of the agenda. I have a bit of a reading test here. No pressure. Sister Roberta's not here with the ruler. I've messed this up. The next 6 items on the agenda relate to hearing officers' recommendations regarding declinations of applications for the NJ Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant Program and the applicant's appeal of same. Prior to the board's vote on each item, pursuant to the authority's public comment policy, a single person speaking on behalf of the applicant appealing the decision will be permitted to speak to the board before the board's vote on each appeal, and will have a maximum of 3 minutes to comment. The comments should be limited to arguments raised in the previously submitted written materials. For the next 6 items, the hearing officer will present each of the appeals. The board will then acknowledge one person for each applicant if present. If an individual representing the applicant requests to speak before the board takes a vote on each item, the board serves as the final decision maker. If the applicant is dissatisfied with the board's final administrative decision, it may appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of New Jersey pursuant to the rules of the court. All right, so here we go. Now, Giselle Vega, our legal affairs officer, is going to handle, you're going to do all 6 of these. You got some hard work ahead of you. I'll let you go through each of these and we'll stop and listen to potential applications, their comments, and then we will take a vote on each of these. All right. Go ahead, please, Giselle.
Thank you.
I'm going to abstain from this. It's Liz Moyo.
Can you put the reason for your abstention on the record?
Great. Gabe, I'm going to reach out to you, okay? I'll go on mute. Go ahead.
Okay.
Chair, I believe I should abstain also. I think Bergen Pack is listed.
Yes.
My firm is doing work for Bergen Pack.
And it's Liz again, because I'm on the board of NJPAC.
Okay. Thank you.
NJPAC is one of the appellants, so.
Thank you. Staff is requesting the members.
This is Aisha. I also sit on the Women at NJPAC board, so I'll be abstaining as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to check in. We still have enough votes to do this with those abstentions. Should be fine.
There should be.
Yeah. Staff is requesting the members to approve the hearing officer's recommendation to uphold the board's declination of the below 6 applicants for the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant and deny their appeal. By way of background, NJAIS is a competitive grant that provides a single award for up to $2 million to a business or nonprofit with experience organizing large-scale events. It's to be used to produce an Arts and Innovation Festival in 2022. Applications were accepted from December 23, 2021 until January 21, 2022 on a rolling basis. 12 applications were received by the stated deadline. On close, applications were first reviewed for completeness. If an applicant's submission was deemed incomplete, the applicant was recommended for decline for failure to provide a complete application. The board approved four such declines in its March 9, 2022 meeting. All other applications were then reviewed by an evaluation committee and scored each applicant on a total of 6 factors. These factors were made publicly available in the board memo dated December 8, 2022, and were detailed in the application instruction and program specifications, which were all posted on the authority's website. The highest scoring applicant was then recommended to the board for awarding of the grant. Note that the awarding applicant is New Jersey Performing Arts Center, NJPAC, which achieved the highest score of 97 out of 100. The other 7 applicants were subsequently recommended for declination based on the scoring and were approved by the board at its March 9th meeting. Declination letters were sent to all of the applicants on March 10th, 2022. All applicants that were declined were given an opportunity to appeal the decision and submit a written explanation with necessary documentation to demonstrate that the reasons for the declination were inaccurate. We note that all appeal materials were to relate back to the date that the application was submitted, and any additional materials submitted or materials showing that the resolutions of past issues would not be considered. I'll begin with the first appeal. M-Plus Communication is appealing the declination of its NJAIS grant application for failure to achieve its highest score. Applicants scored 51 out of 100. On March 16, 2022, applicants submitted an appeal letter via email highlighting its progress within the company since the submission of the application. However, it does not provide any particular grounds for the appeal of their declination. Rather, the appeal confirms their growing relationship with New Jersey partners and provides a new proposal that cannot be considered for this appeal. Although the applicant did not address any specific scoring issues or grounds for the application based on its own scoring, the evaluation criteria and all of the scoring sheets were reviewed to ensure that there were no apparent irregularities. Reviewing of the scoring sheets did confirm that there were no apparent irregularities. As this appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that M-Plus Communications appeal be denied and the board's declination of M-Plus Communications application be upheld. If there aren't any questions, I'll move on to the next appeal.
I think we're doing votes in between.
We're going to do votes.
No, we're
doing the formal presentation,
then any speaker, and then the votes.
So now with any speaker for M-Plus.
No, so sorry, the presentation's all together, and then we're going to do the speakers.
I thought we had the overall presentation. Yeah. Thank you, Gabriel.
Okay, so next we have DW Cultural Solutions Group. DW Cultural Solutions Group is appealing their declination of its NJAIS grant application for failure to achieve the highest score. Applicants scored 79 out of 100. On March 21, 2022, the applicant submitted its appeal offering a new memorandum of understanding with Newark International Film Festival as an additional strategic partner. The appellant also provided supplemental information regarding budgeting and fundraising, as well as further examples of prior festival experience that was not included in its initial application. As noted, new information that was not provided in the initial submission cannot be considered for this appeal. Although the applicants did not address any specific scoring issues or grounds for appeal based on the appellant's own scoring, the evaluation criteria and all of the scoring sheets were reviewed to ensure that there were no apparent irregularities. In reviewing the scoring sheets, no apparent irregularities were found. As appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that DW Cultural Solutions Group's appeal be denied and the board's declination of its application be upheld. If there aren't any questions, I'll move on to the next appeal. Voice Concepts Incorporated is appealing their declination of its NJAIS grant application due to the applicant's failure to provide a narrative in its application that describes the previously worked on festival or events with the final attendance of a total of 5,000 attendees or greater, as required by the NJAIS program specifications. On March 11, 2022, the applicant submitted its appeal via email and attached the PDF presentation of its initial proposal. That PDF presentation included reproductions of invitations and flyers for these events, promotional photos of artists and alleged partnerships. The applicant argues that these images are highlights of past major national event productions that should sufficiently demonstrate their experience in organizing and executing at least one event with an attendance of 5,000 or more in the last 7 years. Appellant also identified two additional events that had more than 5,000 people in attendance. However, this narrative or any identification of attendance size for any noted event was not provided at the time of the application. The NJAIS specifications specifically state that an application must include a narrative that describes the previously worked on festivals or events held after January 1st, 2014, with specific information, including festival attendance totals of 5,000 or greater. Appellant's submission included promotional materials for events allegedly held without any reference to the attendance. Voice Concept did not comply with the specifications by failing to provide the necessary information on their initial application, and their application was appropriately declined. As the appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that Voice Concept Incorporated appeals be denied and the board's declination of its application for failure to submit a complete application be upheld. If there aren't any questions, I'll move on to the next appeal. Camden County Partnership is appealing the declination of its NJAIS grant application for failure to provide documentation, such as a memorandum of understanding or any formal agreement, proving a strategic partnership with the named strategic partner on the application, Camden County. This is required by the NJAIS program specification. On February 14, 2022, prior to the declination, program staff contacted the applicant requesting a signed MOU or signed agreement with their identified strategic partner. On February 16, 2022, the applicant advised that a signed MOU memorializing this strategic partnership with Camden County would not be received before the dated deadline of January 21st. Applicant was subsequently declined and received the declination letter on March 10, 2022. After reviewing the appellant's March 14th appeal email, it was determined that the declination letter was not clear as to the declination reason. On March 16, 2022, the appellant was contacted and the reason for the decline was clarified using the wording of the March 9, 2022 board memorandum. The appellant was given another opportunity to address the proper declination reason. However, the applicant and all of the applicants submitted appeal materials were reviewed for the purpose of this appeal. As the appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that Camden County Partnership's appeal be denied, and the board's declination of Camden County Partnership's application for failure to submit a completed application be upheld. I'll move on to the next appeal. There aren't any questions. Bergen PAC is appealing the declination of its NJAIS grant application based on the applicant's failure to provide a valid tax clearance as required by the program specifications. At the time of the application, the applicant provided a statement explaining that the NJ tax clearance certificate request was pending and that the applicant was not able to provide the necessary documents by the grant deadline. The applicant was subsequently declined and received a declination letter on March 10, 2022. On March 16, 2022, in its appeal, the applicants conceded that they had technical difficulties in securing the tax clearance within the required time frame, and they were preparing to submit everything to the appeal email address. On March 16, 2022, in response to the applicant's appeal email, the applicant was contacted and was requested that the documents referenced in the appeal email be forwarded as they were not provided. Applicant was given the deadline of end of business day Monday, March 21st, to provide those documents. Applicant did not provide the information. As the appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that Bergen PAC's appeal be denied and the board's declination of its application for failure to submit a complete application be upheld. If there aren't any questions, I'll move on to the last appeal. B. Pritchett Music is appealing the declination of its NJAIF grant application. The applicant was declined for two reasons. First, for failure to provide a valid tax clearance, and second, for failure to provide proof of one event with greater than 5,000 in attendance on or after January 1st, 2014, as required by the NJAIF program specifications. With respect to the tax clearance, in its application, the applicant provided a typed letter asserting that they were unable to provide a valid tax clearance certificate. However, they did provide an email dated January 20th, 2022 from the New Jersey Division of Taxation confirming that the applicant was cleared for the business assistance clearance. Per the NJAIF program specifications, the email confirmation from the New Jersey Division of Taxation dated January 20th served as an appropriate verification that the business was in good standing and in turn satisfied that requirement. As such, it is determined that the application should not have been declined for that reason. However, despite that requirement being met, the applicant's application was still considered incomplete as the applicant failed to provide proof of one event with greater than 5,000 in attendance on or after January 1st, 2014. In the application, applicant provided a narrative of an organized event where more than 2,500 people were in attendance. Although the applicant did provide proof of a past event, the number of attendees for that event was not enough to satisfy the 5,000 attendee minimum. In the appeal email received March 20th, 2022, applicant provided five additional organized events with attendees of greater than 5,000. However, as previously noted, new information that was not provided in the initial submission cannot be considered for this appeal. At the time the application was submitted, the applicant did not provide sufficient evidence of worked on festival or events with the final festival attendance total of greater than 5,000, and their application was appropriately denied. As the appellant has not identified any grounds justifying the overturning of their declination, it is requested that B. Pritchett Music's appeal be denied and the board's declination of its application be upheld. That's all I have.
All right.
Wow, you're going to have to get a high chair for you have to stand up there for 15 minutes. Danielle, I'm looking to you for the right order to go through this. Should we, in the order that Giselle just went through them, so first we'll do M plus communications.
Sure. We should just ask, have the operator ask anybody on the phone if they would like to speak to press one then zero at this time. We don't have anybody in the room.
Operator, if there's anyone on behalf of the applicant, M plus communications, if they're attending the meeting by phone, they're not here in the room, please press 1 and 0 on your telephone keypad to be recognized to speak. You'll be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Operator, let us know if there's anybody coming through.
Thank you, and one moment, please. And there's no one in queue.
All righty. Thank you, operator. All right. So if I could get a motion to deny the applicant's appeal. Is that the right way? I'm saying that right? Thank you. This is for M Plus Communications. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Any recusals, abstentions? We've noted the three prior abstentions. Moving on to the next item. This is DW Cultural Solutions. No, I know, but this is number two. I'm going through the order that Giselle went through them, which is different than the order on our script. No, I know, but there's... Tim, listen, I kind of play the game up here.
Gotcha. I'll work on that. Couple more years.
No, I've gotten stuck. I've been burned following the script sometimes. You know, you got to be nimble.
Innovation.
Okay, so DW Cultural Solutions Group. If there's somebody who is speaking on behalf of the applicant, press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be recognized to speak.
And while
operators. Okay. Operator, is there anybody in queue?
We do have one. We're getting their name.
Okay.
Thank you. And we do have Topaz Watkins Edmond. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Topaz is with a different applicant. This is DW Cultural Solutions Group. And our understanding was that Dorinda Walker was going to speak on behalf of DW Cultural Solutions Group.
One moment. We do have her line. One moment.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Ms. Walker, please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Dorinda Walker of Cultural Solutions Group. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to participate in the appeal process. My company applied for the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival grant because we are confident that between the collective experience and high-impact results achieved by both my company and its strategic partners, we bring a wealth of knowledge and experience on festival planning, including the latest in innovation in technology and marketing that drives attendance and positive attendee experience. We also have experience in collaborating with the hospitality industry and local businesses, which is vital to the return on investment and economic impact of a large-scale festival. We understand that inclusivity is not either or, it's an and, because to build a sustainable year-over-year growth model on a scale of a South by Southwest or an Essence Fest, which are two of the largest festivals in the country, it will require input and collaboration from multiple experts from various cultural, community, and business backgrounds to garner a true convergence of the best in art, tech, film, music, education, and culture. Brand sponsorships are key to garnering interest, funding, and awareness, and we have relationships with large global brands such as Google, Microsoft, Disney, and Procter & Gamble, just to name a few. Both Yvonne McNair and myself have won multiple awards in the marketing and entertainment industry for our cutting-edge strategies for event production, digital marketing, and influencer marketing. Yvonne is also an Emmy-nominated event producer and holds several industry designations for event production. Kay Lucas, who is also a partner, is a pioneer in the media industry with extensive experience in media buying and planning, both programmatic and direct. Due to my work in the financial services industry, I have a thorough understanding of the issues related to economic development, having earned the reputation as a thought leader on issues associated with individual, institutional, and structural racism that create barriers to economic development and wealth equity in this country. I have relationships with several think tanks and thought leaders that lend to my ability to bring the best and the brightest minds together to elevate discussions on funding, fiscal policy, and job creation. My collaboration with Kenneth Gifford, director of North Television and Film, led to the establishment and year-over-year growth of the North International Film Festival and multiple new business opportunities that benefited the city of Newark. We understand the power that diversity brings in elevating festival content and customer experience, which is why I respectfully ask that the board reconsider your decision by awarding my company the grant or recommend that my company be a strategic partner to the current grant awardee. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorinda. May I respond to that real briefly?
Sure.
Hi, Dorinda. It's Tim Sullivan. Thank you for your presentation, and I think I agree with the vast majority of everything
you're
you said. I think we agree with 1,000%. One of the things we're going to do, and this will be true for any of the other folks we hear from this morning as well, is both our staff as well as the NJPAC, if they are the ultimate winner here, we're going to ask them to reach out to all the applicants to the programs to find opportunities to partner, collaborate, whatever the right words are, in what we hope will be an exciting and broad and diverse and inclusive festival that brings the best of New Jersey and everything you just described from why we're trying to do this together. So depending on what the board does here, but we'll certainly be following up with you and anyone else we hear from this morning.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorinda.
Any other observations or comments from the board? All right. If I could get a motion to decline the applicant's appeal. Motion to approve, please.
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions beyond what we've already covered? All right. Let's move to the third appeal of declination. This is Voice Concepts Incorporated. Operator, my understanding is that Topazo Watkins Edmond, owner and chief executive officer of Voice Concepts Incorporated, is on the line.
Yes, we need her to press 1-0.
Hi, good morning. It's Tokaza. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Great. My name is Tokaza Watkins Edmond, and yes, I am the owner, Voice Concept Incorporated, and I do appreciate this opportunity to be in attendance on today for this appeal hearing process. And what I sincerely believe to be an inaccurate and I would say improper decision of denial that my company has received, and while we were excited for the opportunity to have presented a 25-page proposal presentation along with my completed application process, I was disheartened, if you will, to receive the basis for the declination of my grant application, and that decision being stated to me that it was on the grounds of we did not include information regarding an event production that had 5,000 or more in attendance. When I state that that was an inaccurate decision, we more than included not only information regarding those event productions, those were national events whereby some of the omissions I even see in the analysis or the hearing officer's discussion in the memo, we included that these were Super Bowl events for both 2014 and 2020, whereby 5,000 and more were in attendance. I did stress that in our narrative that we sent over and restated that in my request for the appeal. So I'm coming today to ask that my request for appeal of this inaccurate and improper decision for the grant denial to be granted, as it would be unfair and improper to deny our grant application based on the grounds that were stated on our letter of declination, and I'm asking that this award grant would be granted. As I understood in listening to the actual board meeting whereby I did hear the award going to NJPAC, based on the grounds that were stated to my company as why we were being declined, this appeal is because NJPAC doesn't have the capacity for 5,000 or more to be in attendance for any event. So that is what we're asking for the board to reconsider, definitely overturn this inaccurate and improper decision. Just that is my request.
Thank you, Tapaza. Any questions, comments on the part of the board? All right. If not, I would like to get a motion to deny the applicant's appeal. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions, other than those noted earlier? All right, let's move on to the fourth item, the Camden County Partnership. Operator, we're not aware of anybody speaking on behalf of the organization. However, if there is someone here who would like to represent the applicant, press 1, then 0. On your telephone keypad to be recognized. Operator, let us know if there's anybody coming through.
And at this time, there's no one coming through.
Great. Thank you, operator. Can I get a motion to decline the applicant's appeal?
So moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Elizabeth and Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? All of those noted. All right, let's go to item number 5, Bergen Pack. Operator, we're not aware of anyone who is speaking on behalf of Bergen Pack, but if you are on by phone, please press 1 and then 0 to be recognized. Operator, let us know if there's anyone in queue.
And there's no one in queue.
All right. Thank you, operator. Can I get a motion to deny the applicant's appeal?
Motion.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any other recusals or abstentions? All right, to the final one, number 6, B. Pritchard Music. Our understanding is that Brennan Pritchard, Chief Executive Officer, is on the line and is available to speak on behalf of B. Pritchard Music, LLC. Operator, let us know when Brennan's available.
Thank you. Please press 1 and 0. And one moment, please. And we do have someone queuing up. One moment. And your line is open, sir. Brennan, your line is open.
Okay. Good afternoon.
We can hear you.
Go for it.
Okay, good afternoon. I would like to thank the NJEDA Board of Directors for this space to verbally appeal for the New Jersey Innovation Music Grant Festival. As stated in our original submission, due to the short time frame of the grant deadline, we were not able to submit all the necessary documentation. However, all the documentation included in the including the taxation clearance and prior event attendance has been submitted in our appeal. As stated in our appeal submission, in our prior events, my company has had the opportunity to serve on a national and global level, totaling over 24,500 people in attendance. We have served and performed here in the United States through our own music festivals, conference, and abroad in the countries of Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Kingston, Jamaica. As stated in our first submission, during the coronavirus pandemic, our company has safely hosted a smaller festival showcasing local talent with 2,500 people in attendance. This local event brought national attention to an area where there is no avenues for the arts and major entertainment events. This music festival grant is so needed in the Clayton community because it will bring the same level of entertainment of the major cities to a small town. Not only will the NJEDA provide resources for the music festival, the Inspire Initiative provides us resources to complete the vision of B. Pritchett Music LLC and establishing and erecting a nonprofit performing arts center developing children's music and arts talents by the way of social-emotional learning. Over the past 12 years, I've been blessed to travel and tour around the world with many of the performers and speakers that has consented to come to this proposed music festival. In 2019, my company opened a state-of-the-art recording studio in Clayton, New Jersey, and now we are recognized within the National Grammy of Recording Association as a voting member. This grant will be a great assistance in bringing all of my musical experience to impact the Clayton community. In conclusion, the Mayor of Clayton, the Township Council, the performing artists, and the residents are waiting for your vote of yes. Your vote today will be the first step of funding the vision, which is providing a resource for the BPM Community Music Festival, an event for the gathering for all people. If time allows, I am able to share my business plan for the Performing Arts Center. Again, on behalf of my company, we thank you for all of your time and consideration for the New Jersey Innovation Music Festival grant. Thank you.
Thank you, Brennan. Do you have any questions, observations by members of the board? All right. I'd like to get a motion to approve the declination of the applicant's appeal. Motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any other recusals or abstentions? All right, moving on to the next item on the agenda, board memorandum. Tim Sullivan, CEO, presenting.
There are two delegated authority memos in your pack. One is on small business credit underwriting projects. One is on real estate. In the interest of time, I will take any questions you have if there's any interest therein.
No questions for Tim. We'll move on to the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in the NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period in person and who have registered to speak at the form provided at the front door will be acknowledged to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting, and any others who are in attendance will be asked as well if they would like to provide public comment. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Go over NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure that there is enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. Speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. First, just to acknowledge in the room, there is nobody here from the public to speak, correct?
No, Mr. Chairman, no one has registered.
All right. Thank you. Operator, if you could see if there's anybody, any members of the public who are on by phone who would like to speak.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, for the members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. And if you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1 then 0 at this time. And our first question or comment is from, I'm sorry, one moment. Brennan Pritchard, please go ahead.
Yes, I would like to just get some more clarity on that. Was I approved for the grant or was I not approved for the grant?
Hey, Brennan, it's Sam. Your appeal was denied for that grant by the board.
Okay, all right, thanks. Okay, have
thank
a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person is Tom Lautrette. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Tom Lautrette. I'm a member of the Rutherford Chamber of Commerce. I have a question about your recent... Good morning. I have a question about your recent renewal of the Sustain and Serve program, which seemed designed to limit eligibility to previous program participants. I'm referring to the requirement of a $25,000 previous purchase of restaurant meals. I believe you had the same restriction when it was renewed last year. I'm just kind of wondering why it was so restricted. And also, I would like to suggest moving forward, you feel free to work out and work with chambers of commerce. Some local chambers of commerce are doing some exciting things to support local businesses, like the Rutherford Chamber of Commerce has a new website, RutherfordNJ.town, that lists all the businesses in town. We have free local help wanted ads, community organizations, and volunteer opportunities. Thank you for your attention.
Hi, Tom. It's Tim Sullivan. Thanks for the question and congrats on the new website. I grew up just up Route 17 from Rutherford, so I know it well. I see it a little bit differently on the eligibility. We actually lowered the threshold for this round. I believe it was 50,000 previously, and now it's 25,000. Applications for that round closed, I believe it was 10 days or so ago. We actually got several new applicants. Whether they're going to be approved or not remains to be determined, but we saw a pretty significant uptick in new applicants who are eligible under that expanded eligibility. So, But I take your comment to heart about working with local chambers, and happy to follow up with you offline.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. And once again, if you do have a question, please press 1 then 0. And we have a question from Ms. Watkins Edmond. Please go ahead.
Maybe let's do this. Is there...
Topaz Watkins Edmond, your line is open.
I believe that was one of the appeal applicants from before, so maybe still have the 1-0 push from prior.
Thank you, and there are no further questions in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there's no additional comments in the room, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. And now request a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Aye.
Bye-bye.
Opposed? Great. Bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
This concludes our meeting.
Thank you, and that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.